All right, so we are holding on your chest on the base, three lines from the bottom. We discussed yesterday the question, do the Mason know what's going on in this world? We started with Rav Chiya and Rav Yonason walking together in the Beis HaKvaris, and Rav Chiya telling Rav Yonason to lift off his tzitzis so they're not dragging on the graves, and the Mason are going to be insulted. And Rav Yonason said, what do you mean? It says in the Pasuk, the Mason don't know anything. And Rav Chiya explains to him, that's not what the Pasuk means. It's talking about Tzadikim versus Rishayim. And that led us into a whole discussion about the question, do they know, do they not know? Or is it maybe if someone goes and informs them, only then they know? If there's announcements in based in Tramila, then they know about it, etc.
Why is it important?
It's important for us to know. What do you mean? It's important for us to know. First of all, it's part of Torah, so that itself is important. So, but second of all, it becomes important. For example, Maisim B'choyim, right? People go to Kvarim and Davin. Are they accomplishing anything, or is it clear? So the after of Yonason and Hodder Beis. So they're going to say, obviously, but why are we doing it by the Mason? Evidently, there must be something to it. So the after of Yonason and Hodder Beis. So in fact, Rav Yonason ended up changing his mind and agreeing that in fact the Mason do know what's going on in this world. The Amr of Shmuel by Nachmeni, Amr of Yonason, because we see that Shmuel Nachmeni later on says, in the name of the same Rav Yonason, Minayim Mason Shemasakim Zem there. How do we know that the Mason talk to each other? The neshamas talk to each other. Shenema, Vayomer Hashem Elov. Hashem says to Moshe right before he tells him to go up to Har Nevo'i. This is it. You're going to pass away over there. Hashem tells him, look at the whole Eretz Yisrael, and Hashem tells him, Zois Ha'oras Hashem Yishbati LaAvram Yitzchok LiYakov Leimor. This is the land which I swore to Avram Yitzchok LiYakov to say that I'm going to give it to them. So what's Leimor? My Leimor. Usually Leimor means to say it over to somebody else. Who's Moshe supposed to say it over to? He's standing over there on Har Nevo'i. Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe. It means Hashem is telling Moshe, Leich Emor Lahem LaAvram LiYitzchok LiYakov, go tell Avram Yitzchok LiYakov in Gan Eden, Shvua Shenishvati Lachem, Kvar Kiyamtiyo Livneichem, the Shvua that I swore to you that your children are going to inherit Eretz Yisrael, I've already fulfilled it for your children. Actually, at this point, they hadn't yet conquered Eretz Yisrael. I mean, of course, the Yarden yet, but they had already conquered the land of Sichon and Og, which is the beginning of it. So already the Sichon and Og is an Eretz Yarden. Nowadays, it's in Jordan, but that was part of the land that was promised to Abraham. Anyway, the point is that Hashem tells Moshe to go and tell Abraham and Sichon Yarden. Now, if you're going to say that the Mason don't know what's going on, meaning all they know is what's going on with their own goof, as the Gemara had said before, that maybe they only know, for example, like when worms are eating the body, but not anything outside themselves. So what would it make a difference if he tells them? They're still not going to know. They're still not going to know that what's going on in the world. Now, Marshall says, didn't we say before that there's the whole possibility if somebody tells them, then they know? So says that's only according, that's within the discussion of Bnei Rav Chiya. Bnei Rav Chiya had taken the view that maybe there's a middle ground. Maybe they themselves don't know on their own, but if somebody informs them, then maybe
only somebody.
Well, that was according to Bnei Rav Chiya, according to the discussion that started with them. Rav Yonason, who had started the whole discussion by quoting a pasuk of Hamasin Einim Yodim Ma'uma, the dead don't know anything. So according to him, not necessarily is there even, so there's no middle ground possible. Either it means they don't know at all, or it means, like Rav Chiya explained to him, that it refers to Rishayim, not to the physically dead. So therefore, once we're saying that Rav Yonason has to accept that they're able to know something, then it means he has to have gone over to Rav Chiya's position, because the position that we talked about, according to the sons of Rav Chiya, that maybe they know if somebody informs them, etc., that whole thing is not relevant according to Rav Yonason. So therefore, so we see that they know.
Why did he change his position?
Because he changed his position. First of all, because Rav Chiya told him that he misunderstood. And later on, we read the psukim and understood them correctly. So the question is, Elamai Yadi. So what are you going to say? Okay, so the Mason, do you know what's going on? In that case, Lomalei Lamemalahu. Then why does he need to tell them in the first place? Again, if according to Rav Yonason, there's no middle ground, there's nothing that they don't know unless somebody tells them, so then if they know, they know without Moshe telling them. The answer is, Lach Zuki Letzivusa Lamoshe. The answer is, you're right. What it is why does Moshe need to tell them in order that they should owe Moshe a favor? Basically, they should be thankful to Moshe for coming and telling them the news. Sort of like, you know, it happens, like a person knows of good news on his own, but someone comes and tells him, then you know he's great. You know, you're grateful to the person for bringing you the news, even if you yourself may have already known it. So therefore, okay. So that's that. So the question is now, so at this point, what are we left with then? Do the Mason know what's going on in this world, or do they not? On the face of it, the Gemara has concluded they do know. And the whole reason that Moshe is telling them is just Hashem wants Moshe. Hashem wants that the others should be thankful to Moshe.
Well, maybe.
One second. On the other hand, there's a Tosfos in Sota. You know, in Sota, it talks about over there how with the story of the Meraglim, and it mentions over there how Kolev famously went during the mission of the Meraglim and went to Chevron on his own to daven by the Kvarim of the Ovos in Chevron, that they should be saved from that Meraglim. So Tosfos over there refers to Or Gemara and says that apparently what Or Gemara is concluding is the Mason don't know what's going on in this world. How Tosfos gets that from this Gemara is a little bit hard to understand. One possibility is that
from this Gemara,
that the Mason, in fact, don't know what's going on in this world. So therefore, so that's the question. How exactly did they get that from this Gemara? One possibility is they may have had a bit of a different gears over here that the Gemara rejects the previous conclusion and says an Ella. Whatever. Anyway, Tosfos does say over there, on the other hand, when a person goes and davens by the caver of the mess, then there's no question the mess knows what's going on, because then the fact that he davens, like you said, he's davening Hashem, that causes things to happen in Shemayim, and therefore the Mason are made, the Neshamas are made aware of that as well. So that's why the point is, so it's the stresses, that's why the point is, Kolev didn't go there, he davened there. So now, therefore, so when we go to a caver, therefore, what are we doing? We're not just standing over there and talking to the neshama of the mess. We're davening there, we're saying tillim and whatever. That's different. Then we're saying that the Mason know what's going on, and then they're able to be good debaters for us, etc.
Maybe they know. It's maybe not between knowing and not knowing. Maybe it's an intermediate step.
Well,
that was to some extent. And the rest, they don't know.
Okay, but the point, bottom line, there's the question. Do they know or do they not know? Okay.
In any case, they know as much as Hashem wants them to know.
Obviously. Okay. Let's go on. Omer Rav Yitzchak, call him a safer after a mess. Rav Yitzchak says somebody who talks badly about a mess, about somebody after he passed away, k'ilum a safer after a heaven. It's as if he's talking after a stone. So what does that mean? A stone obviously doesn't know when you talk about it. So ikadami deloyadi. So some say it means that they don't know at all.
We said the stone here when we
fine knew the book. Okay, the point. No. Okay, right. There's a level where they know that we're not talking words of Torah, and they complain. Why? Right. Right. Others say that it means they do understand what we're saying, but they don't care about it. Because, okay, listen, you know, I'm in the Olam HaEmes, what do I care what they're saying about me in this world? Okay. So the question is, Aini, the Gemara says, is that so? Well, Amar Rapapa, Rapapa says as follows, Chad Ishtoi Milsa Basra Demar Shmuel. It happened after Shmuel passed away. Somebody was saying something negative about him. The Nafal Kanya Mitlala and a big heavy beam or stick or whatever fell down from the ceiling on this guy's head. Or Basal Arunika Demoche and broke open the Arunika literally means the case of his brain. So in other words, a skull or is there? Yeah. So Ishtoi means he told over a story. So this guy, so Bapashkus, we would assume it was because Shmuel himself was masked on him, and then that happened. The answer is no. Shiny Tzurvim in Abana. No, it's different with a Talmud Chacham, like Shmuel. Dikud Shabrichu Tavabi Yikare. Hashem is looking out for his covered and then dealing with somebody who goes against it. So it's not because Shmuel himself knew, it's because Hashem, so to speak, is offended on Shmuel's behalf that this guy should talk against him, but not necessarily would that apply to a regular man. Anybody who speaks badly after the mitzvah of Talmid Chachamim, so one possibility is that it means the same thing as we said before, so it means after their mitzvah, after they die, but when it comes to a Talmid Chacham, we use a more respectful term. Instead of Acham Mitosan, like we said, by a regular person, we mean we have Achra Mes, like we said before. Instead, we use Mitosan, which means their bed, so in other words, their coffin. So it's a nicer way of saying it. The other possibility, actually, the Aruch says, Achra Mitosan means Miloshin going off the straight path. So if a person talks badly because there's a Talmid Chacham who he thinks did something wrong, did something against Halacha, and he talks negatively about it, then that's also no good. Either way, no fault with Gehenim. So according to either explanation, such a person falls into Gehenim. Shenema, as the pasuk says, "V'hamasi makalkaloisam." Those who turn aside in crooked ways. So Rashi explains the previous pasuk in Tilim, this is in Kapitel Kafei of Tilim, goes, "Hey tiva Hashem latovim, Hashem do good for those who do good." So that's referring to tzaddikim, to the Talmid Chachamim rather. So therefore, "V'hamasim," but those who outweigh alkaloisim crookedly, which means, like Rashi said, in other words, those people who want to be master lakach chover, who want to put more things on the side of Averis, of the scale that refers to the Talmud Chacham, Yelichim Hashem es poyaleh oven, the pasuk says Hashem will lead them together with those who do bad, which means the Gehenim, Shalom al Yisrael, and the pasuk finishes off Shalom al Yisrael, which means Afilu b'shosh, Shalom al Yisrael, so even at a time when there's Shalom al Yisrael, which means, Tosfos says, when we're talking about after the Talmud Chacham passed away, at that point there's Shalom because he's not going to go and stand up for, he's not going to cause a whole argument. People are not going to go and argue on his behalf with those who are talking badly about him. Nevertheless, even at such times, you're listening to Hashem as Peyel Avin. So that's where we see, by putting all that together, that we're talking about somebody who's Mesaper Achami Tosan, Shalom HaChachamim, that after the Talmud Chacham passed away, he's speaking negatively about things he did and trying to put things on this Kamakas Choyva of his, so Hashem sends him off to get some cleaning up of his own. Poyle oven means people who do evil. Where do people who do evil go? In Gehenim. So therefore, this person also winds up.
Why do we imply from the disciplines coming is coming?
That's right. Hektiva Hashem LaTovim, Rashi says, because the previous pasuk says Hashem do good for those who do good, and Tovim in particularly refers to Talmud Chacham in Tov Alatora. And then it's interesting, by the way, they found many kvarim in Eretz Yisrael where on the Masevis or on the whatever, on the inscriptions by the graves, it has the expression Shalom Yisrael. So that could also mean what the Gemara says, even when Shalom Yisrael is being written on the grave over there, nevertheless, even at that point, you think the Talmud Chacham is dead. What's the difference? Anybody talks about him, but still, you're not supposed to do that. Tonet Vei Rabbi Shmuel, so in this connection, we learn in a braisa of the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, Im ra'isa tamad chacham sh'over aveira balayla, if you see a tamad chacham who did an aveira at night, al tahar her achra bayon, don't think badly about him the next day, look at that guy, he did an aveira, because shema of the tshuva, because he may have done tshuva meanwhile. What do you mean? Shema Sakhadah? What do you mean he may have done Shuva? This is a Talmud Chacham. We're not talking about, again, you know, a Talmud Chacham in Torah terminology. It doesn't just mean somebody who knows a lot of Torah. You know, we're not talking about a doctor of philosophy in Talmud. You know, we're talking about somebody who's a Talmud Chacham worthy of the name, who learns Torah and who keeps what he learns. So what do you mean maybe he did Shuva? Ella Vada after Shuva. No, you're right. You have to say for sure he did Shuva, and therefore don't be talking badly about him the next day. The Gemara says, "V'hani milu b'dvarim shabagufay." Now that only applies if the avera that you saw him do was something involving him personally. Avu b'mamoyna. But if we're talking about something involving money, then we know, you know, tshuva by itself is not enough. Ad mahad l'mori, he first has to return it to his owner, as we know is the usual rule with dvarim benar machaveri. You first have to return whatever it is that was taken unjustly, ask him mechil or whatever, and then you can do tshuva. There's a Chassidish revert on this, by the way, that says that if you see a Talmud Chacham she'over aveira balayla, you see him, for example, let's say you see him sitting at night and on the face of it not learning. So he looks like he's standing mevatel, like he's standing mevatel's man. The Al Tahara Racha, the Al Tahara Racha, because Shema also Truva or Vade also Truva means maybe at that moment, why was he not sitting and learning? Because at that point, right then, when you saw him, he's busy doing Truva for anything that he may have done during the day. Right then, he's sitting and making his daily cheshbon and nefesh. Yeah. Okay. But Amar Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi. B'chof Dalad Mekoymes based in Menadin Akvod Arab. There are 24 places where there are 24 places that where the Chachamim put somebody in Nidui, which is a level of Cherem, because of insulting Kavod Harav, because they were disrespectful towards their Rebbe. The Chulon Shaninu B'Mishnasenu, and all of them we can find in our Mishnayis, meaning without even having to resort to Brisus and anything, just in Mishnayis alone, we can find all 24 of them. At least that's what the Gemara is assuming at this point, that's what he means. Amalei Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Lazar says to Rabbi Shimon Levi, where do you find 24 such places in Mishnayos, where they put people in Nidui? Amalei, L'chi Tashkach, he says to him, L'chi Tashkach, when you find them. In other words, go ahead, do some research, and you'll find them. Nafak dak v'ashka plus. So Rabbi Elazar went out of the Beis Medrash, and he started checking into it carefully and thinking about it, and he was able to find three times in Mishnayos where we find a case of nidui for covered harav. Number one, hamazalzav on Netilas Yadayim. Number one, somebody who is careless with Netilas Yadayim, who says it's not, who says why did the Chacham bother with it? It's not important to make. It's not important to be careful about, etc.
So he doesn't do it.
Maybe he does it. Maybe he actually doesn't do it. Maybe he does it, but he says why do we need to bother? Whatever. That's one thing. Number two, Rama Sakhar Acham Itasim Shadamar Chachamim, what we just said, a person who speaks negatively about a Tamid Chacham after he passes away, or according to the Oros explanation that he sees that the Tamid Chacham apparently did something wrong and he talks about it. And the third, Ram Negus Daite Klape Maila. And the third one is somebody who acts over familiarly with Hashem. Hashem is, after all, everybody's Rebbe, because Hashem taught us Torah, Malam and Torah, Lam Yisrael. We say every day in Brachas. So therefore, that can be included under Kvod Harav. Magus Daitai, Libre Gasboy, or Gas Daitai, or whatever, means like being very familiar with a person. So Magus Daitai, Klapimaila, means the person who acts in an over-familiar way to Hashem, like he acts with Hashem like as if we're going to have the example soon, like as if he's a spoiled kid and Hashem is his parent and he's going to do for him whatever he wants. Okay, so what are they? Hamasakar acham itas and shatam nechacham in ma'idi. Where do we see the example of somebody who speaks negatively about a tamat chacham after he passed away? So like this, the Tanan. We learn in a Mishnah in Adius. The Mishnah is mentioning over there about a number of halachas that Akavya ben Mahalalel said, where the other chachamim disagreed with him. So he used to also say, besides for these other halachas, Ein mashkin lo yasig yoris v'lo yasig mashachoreris. When it comes to a soita, he says that if the woman is a yoris or is a freed shikoknanis, he says you don't give her the soita water to drink. Because the prophet says Dabar of Bnei Yisrael, so therefore he says that means as opposed to Rashi actually here says that the Giyoris and Meshachreris doesn't mean actually that the woman herself is a Giyoris or Meshachreris. It means that her husband is a Gerer and Eved Meshachreris. Since it says Dabar of Bnei Yisrael, it has to be that her husband is a born Yid. There are other Meforshim in the Sarat Hashas over here, it refers to a Mishnah Melech on the Rambam who discusses that. He's a Yid, but he's not born Yid. He's not. Sometimes when the pasuk says Bnei Yisrael, sometimes it means only people who are born into the Jewish people, not a Yid. Because it would be. So he learns, therefore, that that's what the pasuk means, that the wife of a Ger and Eved Meshachra, or the Mishnah Melech discusses, maybe it means that the woman herself is a Shifcha Meshachreres or a Geres, whatever. So Akavi ben Mahalalel says, such a person, if she's a soita, you don't give her to drink the May soita. If there's a situation where she's a soita, then you have the same rules as would apply nowadays when you don't have May soita at all. She and her husband have to get divorced and she loses her ksuba because of the sachet. Okay. Mashkin the Chum say no such thing. You can give them to drink the May soita just like any other woman. Va'omruloi, and the Chacham said, let's give you an example, Akavya. Maita b'kautimis, it happened with Kautimis, so that was her name, or Rashi says, or maybe she came from a place called Kautim, so they called her Kautimis, whatever. She was Shifcha Meshachreres b'Yerushalayim. She was this case. She was a Shifcha Knanis who had been freed and then got married. She lived in Yerushalayim. So she was a Sotah, the Hishkua Shmaya Vavtalion. And Shmaya Vavtalion, the Nasi and the Avbeistin of the Sanhedrin at that time, who said that they should give her to drink. So you see that a Shifcha Meshachreres is given. But Amalahem Dugma Hishkua. So Akavya ben Mahalalel says to them, they gave her to drink as Dugma. What does that mean? Rashi says, Dugma means similar. Because they were similar to her, therefore they gave her to drink. What does that mean? Shmaya and Avtalion, we know, were descendants of Gerim. They were descendants of Sancheirev. Either some of Farshim explain that, some of the Shonim explain they themselves were Gerim, or they were descended from Gerim, whatever the situation. What do you mean? No, most of us are not descended from Gerim. I mean, maybe in some, you know, our mother's father is mother's father, whatever. In Ben Achaben, we're talking about over here. Shmaya and Italian were Ben Achaben, or they themselves were Gerim, descended from Sancheirim. Anyway, so the point is, he's saying, you know why they gave her Meis Soita? Because they themselves were Gerim, and therefore they didn't mind giving to a Giyotis. Like, so to speak, they want to raise up her profile among the Jewish people, show that Gerim are full-fledged Jews. In other words, they're doing really not what's correct off the Alocha, he's saying. That's a not respectful thing to say about them, that they should change the halacha just because of their own personal thing like that. Tosfos gives, well, according to Akadi ben Mahalal, yes, the halacha is like a chachamim. No. But anyway, Tosfos gives a different explanation from the Aruch. Dugma hishkua means they gave her a sample. They didn't actually give her the actual soda water that has the Megillah erased with Hashem's name with the ink dissolved in it. They gave her something that looked like May soda in order to frighten her. But not that it was the real May soda, he says. But still, the Chachamim say that's also disrespectful to say that they did like that, that they did a whole play act rather than the real thing. And what if it's Moti Laz Alamayim now? What's going to happen? It's not going to cause her to, if she is guilty, it's still not going to cause her to blow up and die. And people are going to think that the soda water is ineffective. So whatever it is, the Chachamim said that he was being disrespectful to Shmaya and Aptalim by saying that. Viniduhu, so they put him in Nidui. So you see that Nidui is given to somebody who is disrespectful to after a Talmud Chacham passed away. This is already after Shmaya and Aptalim passed away. Umes Viniduya, Akavi ben Malal passed away still in Nidui. The Soklo based in Esaroinoi, and they did stone his coffin, meaning, as the Gemara is going to say soon, they put a big stone on his coffin as it was being taken out to be buried to show symbolically that he deserved Skila. So therefore we see from the story, therefore, that you put somebody in Nidri for speaking Acham Itosa Shetam and Chacham. That was the first one. Okay. Then, V'amazalzim and Atilat Yadai Mahi. Okay, where do we get the second one? Where we say if somebody is careless or says that Atilat Yadai is unimportant, where do we see that? The Tan, because that same Mishnah in Adias continues, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Chas V'shalom Sha'akavim and Mahalal V'snader, Rabbi Yehuda, who is now a couple hundred years later, says he disagrees with the premise of the story, Chas V'shalom if they ever put Akavim and Mahalal in Nidri. You should know how great Akavim and Mahalal was. You should know, when they locked the doors of the Azara, we know that when they brought the Korban Pesach, they would divide all the people who are bringing the Korban into three groups, and each group would go in, they'd lock the doors of the Azara so nobody else comes in, they'd shecht and then process their Korban Asrachim, then those people would leave and the next group would come in and repeat for the third one. When the Azara was full of Jews, and there could be millions of people there sometimes, when they closed the doors, there wasn't anybody there who was as great in Chochma and in Tara and in Yiraschet as Akavah ben Mahalal. So Rabbi Yehuda says, how is it possible during the time, the second Beis Hamikdash? We don't know exactly when he lived. The Pashtus, I mean, obviously he lived after Shmaya and Aptalim had passed away. The Pashtus, he lived during the time of Hillel and Shammai, which is the next generation.
Which king?
I don't know which Kodesh. Hurdus, I guess, was the king then. What's the difference? It's during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash. Okay. I mean, you have the Mishnah mentions over there in Adias that he had these three or four machloikasim with the Chachamim, and the Chachamim told him, if you change your mind about those and agree to accept everybody else's opinion, then we'll make you Av Beis Din. And we find in Hillel's times they were looking for a new Av Beis Din. There's a Mishnah in Chagiga mentions that Hillel's Av Beis Din was a guy named Menachem. This Menachem left to go work for the king, and therefore they needed a new Av Beis Din. So the Pashtus, this was when this was going on, so they offered it to Akavim and Malal, they turned it down, so they ended up giving it to Shammai. Anyway, the point is that so Rabbi Yehuda is saying, considering how great Akavi ben Mahalala was, that there was nobody greater than him among the Jewish people in Chochma and in Tara and in Yerushet, how is it possible that that they would put him in Nidri? Okay, I mean, you still, you know, there's no favor, you don't show favoritism in these things, but one point is, one explanation is, how is it possible that he could have actually said something like that that's so disrespectful to Shmaya and Aptalim that would have made him deserving of being put in Nidri? Ela es min nidu. So Rabbi Yehuda says, the fact is, okay, we know that there was somebody put in Nidri at that time, somebody prominent, but he's saying to the Chachamim, you made a mistake who it was. Who was it they put in Nidri at the time? It wasn't Akavi ben Mahalal. Es Elazar ben Chanoch. Rather, there was somebody named Elazar ben Chanoch, Shepikpik ben Atzilus Yadayim, that he was questioning the whole premise, he was mezalzel, as Rashi says, in the Atzilus Yadayim. So he held that Atzilus Yadayim is not important. You don't have to be so careful with it. You don't have to do it for chlal, whatever, which is a takana of the Chachamim. Ukshemes, and therefore when he died, Shochel Beis Din Minichu, Evan Gdola Al Aroni. When he died, the Chachamim sent and had them place a large stone on his Aron when they took him out to bury him. Lalandacha, which teaches you, Shekolam is Nadu, Mes Meniduy, if a person is put in Nidui by the Chachamim, and then he dies still in Nidui, and he didn't bother to go and ask Mechila to be taken out of the Nidui, based in Sokolam, based in stones, his coffin, like symbolically, he deserves Skila for not even bothering to go and see if they can be Matu his Nidui, for going and asking Mechila. So we see from that a person is Mezalzim, or Tosudayim is, deserves Nidui, because Rabbi Yehuda is telling us that's what they did to the Salat of Ben-Chamech. So that's the second out of three that we find in Mishnayos. By the way, as far as Akavi Ben-Mahalalo, it was an interesting thing. During when the Friedrich Rebbe visited Chicago in 1942, so he told over, he was visiting the Chassidim over there, they'd asked him to come and visit, and speaking in the shuls over there and whatever. And during that, there's a whole Kuntras Bikur Chicago of Sichas and Maimarim that the Friedrich Rebbe said there. So at one point, they told over a story from the times of the Alter Rebbe involving a chassid of the Alter Rebbe named Baruch Mordechai, who was a great Talmud Chacham, and another Yid over there, Reb Zalman Leib B'Shmeister, where Misnagid makes fun of him. He says, look at that, there goes the heel of a davener, like, you know, Oishmir is somebody who davens, the Zalman Leib is Pasha to Yid, you know, because that's how they were in that time. They looked down at the non-Talmud Chachamim. So Baruch Mordechai tells this Misnagid, you should know that you're saying this guy is the heel of a davener. You should know the heel of a davener teaches us three very important things. What do you mean? Because the mission in Pirkei Avos, Akavya ben Mahalal, Olaimu, stack over Shlosh Dvarim, and Akavya, Miloshin Okev, a heel, and ben Mahalal means the one who praises Hashem. So the Friedrich Rebbe told this over in Chicago. When that came out, when the Kuntras came out, various people started arguing and saying, you know, a very nice Gleis Beritol, but come on, you know, is that something that you tell over? You know, how we're Akavi ben Mahalal, you're Gaushening Okev, and Mahalal and whatever, come on. And the Rebbe at that time wrote a letter, and he said, listen, you know, we're talking something from a Baruch Mordechai, who was a great Talmud Chacham, he was later on the Rav of Bobroisk, the Sichas Cholim Shal Talmud Chachamim, Sichas Talmud, and the Rebbe starts bringing a whole catalog of things from Midrashim and Zoyaz and Shalaz and this and that, whatever, that yes, Akavya is actually related, Alpi Torah, to the word Akev, and Mahalalel is actually related to Alpi Torah. It's not just it happens to be that his name was Akavya and his father's name is Mahalalel. He does actually represent the Pneumius, the yield, and he does actually... The Akavya ben Mahalalel represents the concept of a heel, which includes the idea of Kabbalah's oil, among other things, and ben Mahalalel does, in fact, it's not just a gleis beritol, it's not just a cute little vert, but it actually has deep roots in Torah, in many different areas of Torah, and the Rebbe wrote a whole catalog and brings sort of one source after another in this letter, showing that, yes, we're not just talking about something that he just said as an awful tough joke, this is actually something based solidly on sources in Torah.
How is the heel related to the pneumius?
I said the pneumius, Akavya, relates to the heel. But the point is, one idea is the heel represents Kabbalah's oil. The Haya Ekev Kishmon means, in other words, when we have Kabbalah's oil, when we have the Kabbalah's oil of the heel to do mitzvah, the heel just does whatever the brain tells it, even though it itself doesn't understand. Okay. Amegis Daite Klape Mailamai. Where do we see that somebody who acts over familiarly to Hashem deserves Nidui? Dikan. We have the story in Masechta Tainis, the whole story of Chonah Ma'agel davening for rain, where you have, you know, a little bit of rain comes, and he says, Hashem, that's not the kind of rain I needed. We need a good rain, a very strong, destructive rain starts coming and breaking down things. That's not the kind of rain I need. I need the kind that'll fill up water pits and whatever. And each time Hashem does what he needs. So the Mishnah ends off over there. Shalach le Shimon ben Shatach le Chonia Ma'agel. So Shimon ben Shatach, who was the Nasi at that time, sends a message to Chonia Ma'agel. Sorich Atali Snaders. You really ought to be put in Nidri because you acted like that to Hashem. You'll be Matriya Hashem. I didn't ask like this. So you really deserve to be in Nidri. The Umale Choni Atta. And if you weren't the great Tzadik Choni, Gozrani Alecha Nidri. In fact, I would have been Gozer Nidri on you. But okay, what can I do? That you act as a chote, like Rashi says, like so to speak, like you find it very easy to be chote and to be matriach your father, to sin towards your father, towards Hashem, and to be matriach him to do whatever you want. Fine, Hashem still does whatever you want. Just like a kid who acts in that way to his father, and his father still does whatever he wants.
So what did he do?
So that's the point, that he's saying over Tasha, each time he's saying to Hashem, Hashem, very nice, you sent this rain, but this isn't the kind of rain I'm asking for. Bring a different kind of rain. That's acting over familiarly to Hashem, like a kid, you know, Taffy, you got me the wrong kind of lollipop or something, you know. So yeah. So we see v'alecha kalsav omer, Hashem Mashadach says to Choni, you should know, you're the kind of person on whom the pasuk says, Yismach avicha v'imecha v'sago yoladtecha. Your mother and father can be happy, and the one who gave birth to you can rejoice. In other words, that they have such a son who's such a high level tzaddik that you're able to be matriach Hashem like that. But you should know, he's telling him, don't do that in the future, basically. But we see from that any other person other than Choni Amago who acted that way would deserve to be put in nidui. Okay, so those are the three that we find in Mishnah. So the question is a true lekka. You're telling me, so okay, we said Rabbi Lazar did research, and all he could find was these three examples, where we say we put somebody in nidur because of kvod rab. You're telling me there's no others? B'ha'ikah d'tani Rabbi Yosef. We have what Rabbi Yosef taught on a b'raisa. Toidos Ishroimi, Toidos, that was his name. Ishroimi means the man of Rome, so he was apparently a leader of the Jewish community in Rome. And this is, by the way, during the time of the Beis Hamikdash. But there were during the time of the second Beis Hamikdash, there already we know from various historical sources there was already a pretty substantial sized Jewish community in Rome. Anyway, so he started a minhag among the Jews of Rome, la'achilim gedoyim mekulos in b'leilat sachim, that on Pesach night by the Seder they should eat a gdi mekulos. Gdi means a kid, a baby goat. Mekulos means that it's roasted whole with the kishkis and the legs hanging outside of it. Mekulos, Rashi explains, literally means like an armed soldier. So therefore, the point is, when you have the animal is roasting on the spit over there, and you have these things sitting next to it on the spit, roasting separately next to it, it resembles it looks like a soldier, like a warrior with his arms next to him. So he made the minhag that they should do that, and that they should do that in Rome, because they're in Rome, they can't bring the Korban Pesach, so therefore, as a zecher for the Korban Pesach, they should do that. Sholach le Shimon Shatach, the same Shimon Shatach from before, sends him a message, Gomole Todes after, if you weren't Todes, if you weren't the important person Todes, Gozani Alechan Nidui, I would have declared Nidui on you, Shatach Machal, it's a Kodshim Achot, because you're causing the Jewish people to eat Kodshim outside the Beis Mikdash. Actually, the Gemara mentions in Psachim, where it quotes this, and also on the side of it, he brings in Agos with Yonim, that yeah, it doesn't mean literally, the Gemara says, it doesn't literally mean Kodshim, nobody was actually Makdashim, but it looks like Kodshim. It looks like Kodshim. People are going to think that you're allowed to eat Kodshim outside of this expression. The Gemara also discusses over there in Sakhim why exactly, what does he mean in Molo Todas after? Does he mean that Todas is a Talmud Chacham and therefore he deserves an extra break? Does it mean that he was a very powerful person and Shimon Shadrach is afraid to put him in Nidur? The Gemara gives two possibilities. One is that he was a Talmud Chacham. The other is that he's called Matu Malai Lakisha Talmud Chachamim, that he's a Zvulun who partners in business together with Yisachos, with Talmud Chachamim, in order to help them be able to learn Torah without financial difficulties. Anyway. So we see from that that there's another example where you put somebody in nidui because of kvod harav, because of making people misunderstand and think that they can eat kodshim outside of the mikdash. So why didn't Rebbe Lazar find that? The answer is Mishnah Seinu Kamenin. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi had said that we can find in our Mishnahs. This is a b'raisa, so that's not counted. Yes, it is an example, but that's not the example. That's not one of the examples that he was telling Rebbe Lazar to go find because it's in a b'raisa. Okay. So the question is, you're telling me in the Shnayas there's no other examples of somebody being put in nidui for disrespect? What about this that we learn in a Mishnah in Kalim about a case of an oven made out of clay? So now an oven is usually, it's made like a keli, you actually described. It is movable, although usually they cement it to the ground. But nevertheless, the Torah tells us that it's makabel toma. And because it's earthenware, as usual, we know earthenware cannot be kashered. It can't be kashered, it can't be made toho or whatever. So if it becomes tome, the Torah says you have to break it apart. So what happens if you broke it as follows? If you cut up the oven into rings, so you have the oven is shaped kind of like an upside down cup, or like a beehive or something. So it's wider on the bottom and narrows a bit towards the top, and then it has a hole on the top for the smoke to come out, and it has a hole near the bottom to be able to put in the bread or whatever. or actually near the top is where they put the bread in. From the top near the bottom is where they put in the coals and rake the coals and whatever. Yeah. Anyway, so you cut it into rings. You have the bottom piece, the next piece on top of that, or whatever. You cut it into rings like that, each one less than a certain size. Then what you did is you put it back together using cement made out of sand. So now you have, when the oven is put back together, you have a piece of the original oven, then a layer of the sand, of the cement made out of sand, another piece, more sand made out of cement, etc. And so, until you get to the top of the oven. So is that the Kabbal Torah? Rabbi Eliezer Matar, the Chachamim Matarim. Rabbi Eliezer says that it is it's not the Kabbal Torah anymore, because it's not like a Kli Cheres, because it's not like a kli cheres anymore. It's considered now like a kli adama. It's considered like a keli made out of unfired earth, which is not the kabbal tuma. But chamim matamin, and the chamim say that's still tummy. Because with a chamim say it's still tummy.
Why does chamim say it's tummy?
Because they say that the sand is not important. It's bottle sand. Whatever the exact reason is, anyway. V'zeu tanure shel achnoi, and the Mishnah says this is the oven of achnoi. This is the famous story of the oven of Achnoi, of the Tanur Shal Achnoi, and the Gemara in Bava Metzia tells the whole story. My, but here the Gemara just says briefly, my Achnoi, why do we call it the oven of Achnoi? Amr of Yehuda Mashmo, Malamed Shi Kifu Halachos, Ta Achnoi there. It means the Chachamim surrounded this oven, or surrounded him, meaning Rebbe Eliezer, or the oven, with Halachos, like an Achnoi. It actually explains an Achnoi is a snake that winds itself into a circle. So therefore, like they surrounded him like with halachas, with proofs in halacha, like a snake, with timuhu, and they showed that it's tummy. In other words, the point is like they brought all kinds of solid proofs that it's tummy, to the extent where as if you're surrounded by a snake and you can't get out. That's how like Rebbe Eliezer is like stuck in there without being able to prove that his opinion is correct. And in fact, you have the whole story over there. That's how Rabbi Eliezer, after he runs out of arguments up Yalacha, he starts appealing to Nissim. The carob tree should show it. The water should show it. The walls. We all know the story. Yeah. So, and the Chacham ended up declaring a tummy. V'tanya, and we learn in a Braisa regarding that story. On that day, they brought all the taras that Rabbi Eliezer had declared to her. That, in other words, where such an oven had become tummy, and then later on they broke it apart. They did this whole thing. So Rabbi Eliezer says not makabel tuma. So therefore, any food that baked in that oven according to Rabbi Eliezer is tahor. Meanwhile, the Chachamim say it's tummy. So they broke them the sofum lefanav, and they burnt those foods in front of him, because according to them, this is food of truma. This is food of truma that became tummy, and truma that's tummy has to be burnt. All of a soif berchuhu. And in the end, well, blessed is a euphemism. It means they put him in nidr. So we see that because he was arguing over much about this. Again, you know, he's saying that because it's out of respect for Thomas Chacham, like Rebbe Eliezer. I mean, come on, you know what I'm gonna.
You need to have respect for someone who's putting nidr.
Apparently, you actually have in the story in the Gemara over there that who's going to tell him. Rabbi Akiva says, I'll go and tell him gently, because if somebody just tells him carelessly, then he's going to be offended, and the offense of the Talmud Chacham has severe effects in the world. And even so, even though Rabbi Akiva broke the news to him very gently, still Rabbi Eliezer started crying, and it had an effect, etc. It's a whole long story over there in the Gemara. But yes, after all, because of the story. But even despite, you know, the point is, even though they put him in Nidri, the Chacham still respects him greatly. They just, you know, the fact is we have to make, look, after Adam will have to, the Torah tells us we have to follow the majority. So therefore they had no choice. But yeah. Anyway, the point is that the point is the Mishnah mentions the Tanur Shel Achnoi. So there you have an example where the story led to him being put in Nidri. So why didn't Rabbi Eliezer find it? The answer is actually, okay, but the fact of the matter is the Mishnah doesn't mention the part that they put him in Nidri. It only says that in the Braisa. The Mishnah just mentions the actual case in Halacha, the Tanur Shel Achnoi. So therefore, it's not something the Mishnah saying. Okay. So the question is, so how do you find 24? You're right. There's only three in the entire Mishnah, and where are you getting the other 21? The answer is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Medama Milsa Lamilsa, because Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi arrives at 24 by comparing one thing to another. meaning that he goes through Mishnayos and he finds other cases where a Yachid argues a tremendous machloikas with the Chachamim, or where one of the Chachamim speaks out of turn and in a disrespectful way against one of the other Chachamim, and he says, you know, he should have deserved to be put in Nidri. So even though the Mishnah doesn't say that they actually did, Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says this is a case where Nidri would have been appropriate. So therefore, by that, in going that way, he arrives at 24. But Rabbi Elazar, lemadama, milsa lemilsa, whereas Rabbi Eliezer doesn't do that. He just takes straightforward what does it say in the Mishnah, and there are only three.
So it's not 24.
So it is 24. It is 24. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi finds 24 by looking at cases where he says that Nidri would have been appropriate based on the way this particular person spoke, based on the way this particular Tana spoke or whatever, even though it doesn't actually say they
right,
put him in Nidri.
I mean.
Right. But the Rabbi Elazar says, yeah. The Rambam actually does this. The Rambam Paskins, and I believe it's brought in Shulchan Aruch as well, that there are, in fact, like Rabbi Shulchan Levi says, 24 cases where a person is put in Nidri. Not all of them come from Mishnayos. In fact, the Rambam finds in many different places in Shach where we say that people were put in Nidri for one reason or another. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Noisyan Mita B'chilufehen. We said that those who are carrying the coffin and their substitutes are potter from Kriya Shema because they're being Osik B'mitzvah. So, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Ein Moitzian Es HaMes Samach L'Kriya Shema. We don't take out the mess to bury him when it's getting close to the time of Shema. V'imitzchilu Ein Machsikin. But if they did, then they don't interrupt in other words, because you don't want to have that people should have to miss Kriya Shema. So let them first say Shema, and then they'll start the funeral. The image chilu, but if they already started the funeral, ain't much sticking, then they don't interrupt it for people to say Shema. Then you have the din that it says in our mission that the people who are carrying the order in our exempt. What does it mean, samach l'kli Shema? Rabbeinu Yonah talks about two possibilities. Either it means a half hour before Mishayakir. We learned in the first parak that the earliest time of Shema is Mishayakir ben Tchelus Lovan, or when a person can recognize a casual acquaintance 4 amos away. So half an hour before that time is called samuch to the time of Kriya Shema. You shouldn't start the funeral then. The other possibility is samuch means, the other possibility is it means depending, each funeral takes a different amount of time. So they have to figure in advance how long is this levaya likely to take and calculate based on that, are we long enough before the time of Kriya Shema that we go samuch? So in other words, it wouldn't be a fixed half hour. It would be depending on, yeah.
Because we cannot say Kriya Shema in the presence of the man.
Not because we can know. Well, that's true also, because that's only within his 4 amos. No, because we said that the Noisyan Mitta, the people who are involved in carrying the Mitta, are going to be possibly Arturim from Kriya Shema. That's what we discussed before, whether they're allowed to, or whatever. The point is, the fact that they're potter means we shouldn't be, yeah. Okay. So the question is, Eini, is that so? V'harav Yosef akur samach l'Kriya Shema. Don't we find that of Yosef, they did his Levaya, they brought out his Mitta when it was close to the time of Kriya Shema, according to either of these definitions? The answer is Adam Choshev Shaini. It's different by an important person. Rabbi Yosef was a Rosh Yeshiva, so therefore he's different. They can do his Levaya even at a time when they wouldn't do anybody else's. But anybody else's, they should first say Kriya Shema and then start the Levaya. We said Shalifne Amitya V'Shalacher Amitya. We said you have the people who are ahead of the Mitzvah and the people who are behind it, the ones who we do need them to carry, the ones that we don't need. So turn around, Ha'oskin Behesped. When they're involved in doing the Hesped for the mess. Bizman Shames Mutalufnehem, if the mess is in front of them, and they're not supposed to be saying Kriya Shema right there, because Loyav Lorosh, as we said before, is making fun of the mess, so to speak, that we can do mitzvahs and you can't. So therefore, Nishmatin Echad Echad Bekodin, therefore, what they do is they leave one at a time and say Kriya Shema, and then return. So you have a whole bunch of people there in the room. Nobody's going to miss one person going out. So one person goes out and says Shema, and then he comes back, and the next person goes out, and then repeat until. If the mess is not in front of them, Rashi gives two explanations of what this means, lufnehem and not lufnehem. One is that it means whether it's in a different room versus not. So you can have, sometimes the mess is in the same room where they do the hesped, sometimes the mess is in a different room. So if he's in the same room, then we have to go out one by one, as opposed to when he's in a different room. Another explanation, Rashi says he's on a different side of the room, because there's a machlokas rishonim, when we talk about it here about we say that you're not supposed to learn Torah and whatever lifnei ames. Does it mean if you're inside a room, does the whole room count as dalad ames? Or do we say dalad ames still applies? Okay, so those are the two different ways of looking at it. So if the mess is not in front, then it's the machlokes. So if the mess is not in front of them, according to either of these definitions, hein yoshev b'kodesh, and then everybody there who's involved in the hesed can sit and say shema, well, who yoshev b'daimim? He, the other, sits and is quiet because he's part of from kriyas shema, as we said. And we said according to Rashi, he could say kriyas shema if he wants, according to Tosfos, and most of the other Rishonim, he shouldn't, because covered a mess. Then when they stand up to daven shemana esrei, at that point, he should stand and say tzidduk adin, and say tzidduk adin, and he accepts Hashem's justice on himself.
Tzidduk adin,
that's what it is. Exactly that. But the person says, a certain tefillah, that he shows that he accepts that Hashem's judgment is just.
What is it?
For example, nowadays, we say the pasuk Sur Tom and Paula, and we say a few other tzidukim. So, and he says in his tzidduk adin, he says as follows: I know I've done a lot of averus before you. You didn't pay me back even 1/1000th of what I really deserved. That you should fence in our breaches, and it was like this: there's a breach, there's like a hole been knocked in our wall by my relative passing away. So you should fill in this breach, or pirtes kolam chabes Yisrael, and breaches of all your Jewish people. Rachamim with rachamim. Okay, Amar Abaya, but Abaya says that's not the right nusach to use for tzedek adin. Lo mi boile le inish lamei mahachin. A person shouldn't say such a thing. Hashem, you didn't punish me as much as I deserve, which implies, so punish me more. Don't say that. The Amr of Shimon Lachish, v'chein tanem b'shmeidin of Yesi, lo oilam al yiftach onem pela satan. A person should not open up his mouth to the Satan. Don't talk like that, where then the Satan can use it to argue against him. And Shemayim, look, you know, he himself admits that he's deserving of a lot more punishment. The Amr of Yosef Maikra, Rav Yosef says, where do we have a pasuk that where we see this idea that a person should not speak in a way that can be used against him? Shenema, King Atis Doim Hoyinu, you have a pasuk in Yeshaya, it's an Atorah of Shabbos Chazon, where the Jewish people said, if Hashem hadn't left us a little bit of a remnant, then we would have been completely destroyed like Sodom. Maya Hadrulahu Navi, and what does the Navi answer? Oh, you're mentioning Sodom. Shimud Var Hashem, Tine Sodom. Listen to what Hashem says, you princes of Sodom. In other words, that because they themselves are comparing themselves to Sodom, like we were newly destroyed completely like Sodom, so therefore, you know what, you're right. Now that you mention it, you are actually acting a lot like Sodom. So we see that a person shouldn't know. Okay. We said it, we know the famous thing, that what a person says has a big effect. You have the famous story of the Baal Shem Tov, and where one guy says to the other, I'll rip you like a fish, and then the Baal Shem Tov shows his Talmidim how Lamaila he actually is doing that, because the person's effect, and that person's words have an effect there. Okay. We said, cover us a mess, the Chazir V'chola. We said, once they buried the mess and they're on the way back, they're in the Shura, the people are standing there by the sides, and the mess is walking through, and they're being Menachem Oval. So we said, when they're on the way to the Shura, the Mishnah had said, if they're able to start and finish Shema on the way, then they should do that, and if not, then not. So what does that mean? So it seems the Mishnah is saying, only if they're able to start and finish the entire Shema, only then should they start it before the Shura. It seems that if they can only finish one paragraph or one pasuk, then they shouldn't do that. Or a minu, but I have a contradiction. Braisa says, "Kovra us a mess b'chazru." Im yichol lahaf to v'ligma after the parak echad or pasuk echad. Even if they're only able to finish one parak or one pasuk, they should at least do that. And by the way, there are poskim who say, "Well, one second. The answer is hachinam u'kama." You're right. The mission doesn't mean that they can finish the whole shema before the shura. It means im yichol lahaf to v'ligma after the parak echad after the pasuk echad. Actually, yagiru the shura. If at least they have the time to do that before they reach the shura, yaschilu, then they should start it. V'im lav lo yaschilu. If not, then they shouldn't even start. And there are poskim who say, brought in Shulchan Aruch, that once they do start, they don't interrupt it for the Shura. In other words, what we're saying is that, so if they have time, let's say, you know, they have 10 seconds till they reach the Shura, so in that 10 seconds they're able to say Shema Yisrael and Baruch Shem, let's say, once they've started that, then already they should finish the rest of Shema. They shouldn't be interrupting in the middle of Shema for being Menachem Oval. All we're saying is, if let's say, for example, it's going to be only 3 seconds until they reach the Shura, and they're not even going to have the time, let's say the Pasuk Shema Yisrael, then fine, wait till after the Shura and only then say it. We said ha'undim b'shura b'chola. We said the people who are standing in the shura. So we said the ones who are on the inside are pasuk, and the ones who are on the outside are chayim. So turn it up on them. Shura ha'roya p'nima, the row of people who can see to the inside, who can see to the middle, which means Rashi says we don't just mean the people who are standing in the front row. We also mean the people right behind them. They're also able to see towards the middle. so they can see between the heads of the people standing in front of them. So those people, Keturah, those people are Patur from Krishna. The She'ena, Roya Pnima, the ones who cannot see to the inside, Chayev, then they're Chayev because they're anyway not going to...
Meaning,
in other words, so you have, picture how the Shura works. If you've ever been by a Leviah, you have people standing in rows on both sides, and you have the oval walks in the middle, and as he's walking by, everybody tells him, I'm walking Menachem Eskin. So now you have, you can imagine, there's rows and rows of people, you know, sometimes you have a small Leviah, and everybody's in the front row, but, sometimes you have a huge Leviah, there's thousands of people over there, and so you have, there's people in the front row, and then there's people behind them, and whatever. Once you get to the third row and further back, they're already not really seeing the oval. So they're
in line with the oval, but they're behind.
No, they're not. No. They're. Yeah. Again, you have the oval in the middle over here. You have people standing over here and here on the sides, and then you have people standing behind them and people standing behind them. Once you get to the third row back from the middle space over there, then they're already not seeing the oval because with everybody standing in front of them. Yeah. So they're chayav because they're not there to be menachem oval. Rabbi Yehuda says differently. If they're coming because of the oval, it's actually the menachem oval p'turin. Machmas asman, but if they're coming because of themselves, Rashi says, because they just want to see. Rashi says actually it means they're just coming to see the spectacle. So then chayavim, because they're not really there for the oval. The other possibility, and there's a different girsa over here, which Rabbeinu Yonah brings, is that if they're machmas oval, if they're coming because of the oval, versus they're coming because of the covered of the mess. So then there'd be the difference. If they're coming because of the actual oval himself, because let's say, for example, they know him, they're his friends or whatever, then they're poster, as opposed to if they're just coming because they knew the mess, for example, but they don't know the Avelim, then they'd be hired. Rabbeinu Yonah also discusses that maybe what Rabbi Yehuda is saying could be a kula, or it could be a chumra, versus what the Tanakhama is saying. Or we say, is Rabbi Yehuda saying that even the people who are many rows back, if they're there because of the oval, they're still poster? Or is he saying, in addition, aside from the question of where they're standing, there was also the question what brought them there in the first place? Okay. So now the Gemara is going to start a discussion, which is going to relate back to a Levaya, which is why the Gemara is going there. If a person finds kilayim in his garments while he's walking in the street, he has to take off that clothing, even if it's in the middle of the street, even if he's just going to be standing there, naked. My timer ain't chokma vein tvuna vein etzel neged Hashem, because as the pasuk says, there's no chokma or understanding or advice against Hashem. It's also al pitoreh to wear kilayim. Therefore, no choice. You got to take them off. Which means kol makom sheyesh chilul Hashem, whenever there's chilul Hashem involved, ein chok and kavod l'rav, you don't show kavod to the rav. And actually, by the way, so the Rambam brings, we're apparently based on a different girsa, we're not just talking about the person finds kilayim in his own clothing. If he finds kilayim in somebody else's clothing, he sees somebody walking down the street, he knows that that thing is kilayim, even if that person is a zebra, he has to rip it off him in the street. Because it's also up to him. So actually, okay, now that you mention it, actually in Shulchan Aruch, it mentions, first of all, we're talking about where it's kilayim daraisa. There is, as there is in most other mitzvahs, there are things that are also daraisa, and then there are things that are also d'rabbanon, as a yod. So kilayim d'rabbanon, then these dinim don't apply. You're allowed to go home and then take it off. And also, the in Shulchan Aruch it brings, the Ramah brings from the tour, in the name of the Rosh, that if the other person does not know that it's kilayim, you're not obligated to tell him. What we'd be talking about over here, where he himself knows that it's kilayim, and you see him walking down the street with it, then you rip it off him. Yeah. Okay, the Gemara says, mate.
With telling him or without telling him?
In other words, he himself knows. We're talking about according to the Rosh. We're talking about that he knows that it's kilayim, so therefore he knows he's doing something wrong.
No,
to him.
Then,
yeah.
The Rosh,
okay, well, then that's the point. So you rip it off him, even if he's your rebbe. Okay, the Gemara says, Macy, I have a contradiction. What do you mean? You're telling me that you can't be over on a mitzvah because of covered, because of people's covered. We learn in a braisa, cover us a mess because you, if they buried the mess and now they're on their way back from the funeral, well, if they have bais drachim, they have two possible ways, they have two possible paths that they could take. Achas tahor of achas tmeya. One of them is tahor and the other one is tomei because there's a kever somewhere along the road. So it depends. Bob Tahora, if the oval starts walking down the Tahor path, Bo Nima Tahora, then everybody else follows him on the Tahor path out of respect for him. Barbatmeya, but if he comes on the Tommy one, Boyanim Batmeya, then they come with him on the Tommy one. The Pashtuns, even if they're Koyanim. So what do you mean they come with him on the Tommy one? Mishum Kvodi, because of the Kvodi. What do you mean? My Lema in Chokma Ben Kuna Lenegan Hashem. What do you mean? You're not allowed to be over on an Issa Doraisa of Koyanim becoming Tommy because of the Kvodi of the Oval. The answer is Tilgamar of Abba, but Besa Pras, the Rabbanim. The answer is, Rabbi Abba says, we're not talking about this Tomei path. It's not Tomei because there's an actual cave there, which would be Matame Daraisa. We're talking about the path leads to a Besa Pras, which is only also Drabonim. A Besa Pras is a field where there was at one point a cave in it, and then somebody plowed the field. Midaraisa, we're not concerned about it. Midaraisa, we assume the plow, the Torah doesn't assume the plow is going to go that deep as to disturb the cave. Midrabanan, we're concerned that the plow may have broken the body and scattered it all over the field, and therefore you had it. After all, even a bone the size of a grain of barley is enough to be a Tamei person. So therefore, the Chachamim declared the whole area of that field, up to 100 by 100 amos around the caver, is Tomei Midrabanan. But it's only Midrabanan, and when it comes to an Isra Dirab, up to 100 amos away from the caver. Yeah.
That's a huge area.
Okay, so you're right. So that such a thing is called a Besa Pras. The word pras means broken. The word pras means broken because there may be broken bones all over there. So that's only also Dirabanan. So since it's Dirabanan, then therefore we can be makel by it when it comes to the covenant of a novel. And we know it's only Dirabanan. The Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel, a person can blow on a Besa Pras in order to go. Meaning, in other words, we're talking about, Rashi explains, the Gemara mentions in other places, let's say a person is on his way to bring the Korban Pesach, or for any of a couple of other important purposes, mitzvah. His path takes him to a Besa Pras. Now, if he becomes Tomei, of course, he can't bring the Korban Pesach. What we allow him to do is he can walk as he's walking along. He'll blow on the dust on the ground as he's walking. So maybe it means you have to walk on all fours, or maybe it means he takes along with him a long straw or something. Whatever it is, the point is, the whole problem is if there's going to be a bone there the size of a barley grain, so he blows the dust, and then if there's a bone there, he'll see it, and he'll walk around it. It's not metamid ba'oil. To be metamid ba'oil, you need a larger amount of bone, so that's not an issue. It's only a problem if he touches it or moves it. So by this, by blowing away the dirt as he goes along, so we don't allow that. In the ordinary case, let's say a person is on his way to Truma for something, let him just find a different path. But when he's on his way to Korban Pesach or certain other mitzvahs, then we allow him to do that.
If you don't see that's in the way, doesn't matame you?
If he doesn't see it or touch it, then he's not matame. If he doesn't touch it or move it, then he's not matame.
So if it's underneath a layer of sand,
then fine, he's not moving it. So he's not touching it, he's not moving it. So it's not a problem. The Amr of Yehuda Bar Ashi, the Shmei Derab, also we find another din where we see that we're makel with a Beis HaPras. Beis HaPras, Chenidash Tahar, a Beis HaPras that was trampled, and there were many people walked through it and trampled it with their feet, is Tahar, because now we assume if there were any bones there, they've been broken up into pieces smaller than the grain of barley, and therefore they're not Matama anymore. So we see the whole concept of a Beis HaPras is only Derabanan, and therefore we can be makel in it for people, or therefore we can be makel in it when the people are accompanying the other. But when it comes to an Issa Daraisa, that not. Okay, Toshma, the Amr of Elazar Bar Tzadik, who was a Kohen, says, "Midaugin Hayino Agabe Agronis Shomesim Lekras Malchei Yisrael." When we were going to greet a Jewish king, he lived in the time of the Second Mishnah, so for a period of time there were Jewish kings over there. So we would jump over from one coffin to another in order to greet a Jewish king. Now, he's a Kohen. What's he doing? What's he doing going on top of graves? In fact, this concept that you go and see a king is not just a Jewish king. We learned this in the first parak. You're even supposed to go when a Goyish king is coming to town. You should go and greet him. Because this way, if you have this course in Mashiach times, he'll be able to see the difference between a Jewish king and a Goyish king. The point is, in other words, for example, a person should take the time when a king is coming to town, you go and see him, you go and greet him. So the point is, Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Tzadik is saying they're jumping over from one ordering to the next to go and see the king. What do you mean? He's a kohen. Amai leimein chokma vein tzvona vein etzvona negan Hashem. Again, this is a matter of kovod abrius, but how are you being over on it's a daraisa for it. The answer is kidir rava. The answer is he was doing like what Rava says. The Omer Rava, that Rava says like this, Dvar Torah, Minat Torah, it's like this. Oihel, we know that an Oihel, Kol Sheyesh Bechalal Tefach, if the Oihel that's over the mess is at least a Tefach tall, and one Tefach by one Tefach square in size, so it's one cubic tefach at least, then it blocks the tumma from going upward. If there's no space of a tefach, then it doesn't block the tumma, then the tumma just goes straight up and down. Now, most coffins have at least a tefach between the top of the mess and the top of the coffin. And this coffin is not usually made so exactly to the size of the mess that there shouldn't be a little space, but there's usually at least a tefach space above the mess inside the coffin. Now the Chacham made a gzera that a kohen shouldn't walk over a coffin or a grave. Al sheyesh ben mishum she'ein ben. The Chacham said even if this particular coffin has a tefach space, don't walk over it because what if it doesn't? We might confuse it with the case where it doesn't.
This halal is the Rabbanan. Where do we get it from?
Because the Torah tells us that you have to have an oil, and the Chacham explained to us that it's midaraisa, but the shear of it is like all the shear. And the Allah of Moshe Mishinai, that a tefach, has certain dinim when it comes to you. Okay, anyway, the point is, so the Chacham made a gzera that a kohen shouldn't walk over any coffin because this particular one might not have a chol tefach. But most of them do, and therefore, when it comes to the covet of a king, the Chachamim didn't make that zera, and therefore he's allowed to walk over it. So that's why he's walking over, because here it's only an Isser Derabanan, because most Aronis do have that kolal tefach.
They made it
so there's rest. In this particular case, by the way, he was doing it for a Jewish king. The Rambam learns, based on what we're saying, that the same thing applies to Goyish kings as well. So the Rambam learns that the same halacha applies. If you're going to see a Goyish king also, then a Kohen can walk over Aronis for the same reason. The Magen Avraham questions that. He says maybe what the Gemara is saying is there is a concept of going and seeing a Goyish king, but this exception that we're saying for Kavod Abrius maybe only applies to a Jewish king. Okay. Next, Toshma. God or Kvod Abrius, we say in a Braisa, the honor of people is a very great thing. That because of that, you push off a loisa seh that's in the Torah. What do you mean? Well, how can you push away a loisa seh because of Kvod Abrius? The answer is Tilgma Rav Bar Shaba Kamedra Kahana. Rav Bar Shaba standing in front of a Kahana as a Talmud explains that we're not talking about any loisa seh. We're talking about one specific loisa seh, the lav de lois saucer. We're talking about a lav d'rabbanan. We're talking about when you have an isur d'rabbanan, where the whole concept of d'rabbanan is where do we get the concept that we have to listen to what the Chachamim say, is because the Torah says loisos, so don't turn away from anything that the Chachamim say. So that particular lav is set aside for covered abuse. Well, that's it. The question is, achichu alei, they laughed at Rav Bar Shaba. What do you mean? Lav d'loisos, so d'araisi. What do you mean? That's a lav like any other lav in Torah. So what do you mean? That they thought he meant that even if you have an Isser Torah, which is covered abrius, then you should be over on it. What do you mean? This is a lav from the Torah as well. Amar Afana, but Afana tells them, Gavra Rabba Amar Milsa. Listen, a great person, Rav Bar Shaba, said something. Lo Yisachichu Alei, you shouldn't laugh at him. Kol Mili Dirabbanan As Mechinu Alav Lo Yisachir. You should know, the whole concept of Dinim Dirabbanan all comes from Lo Yisachir. Where do we get the Chalal, the whole concept of the Chachamim have the ability to ask those things for us? It's because the Torah says, don't turn away from what they say. So therefore, umishum kvoida shor rabbanon. So there are cases where the Chachamim set aside an isur d'rabbanon because of kavod abrius. Rashi gives a few examples of it. One of them, because first of all, we mentioned in connection with kelayim, that if kelayim d'rabbanon, you're not obligated to take it off in the street. You can wait till you get home. Another example Rashi brings is, let's say, a person is wearing clothing with tzitzis on it on Shabbos. Let's say the tzitzis breaks. Same idea. If it's postal d'araisa, same thing. If it's in Rosh Hashanah, he has to take it off. But if it's in Carmelis, even if it was postal d'araisa, he doesn't have to take it off, because the whole concept of carrying in a Carmelis is only d'rabbanan. And if the psul itself is only d'rabbanan, then of course also he doesn't have to take it off, even in Rosh Hashanah. Another example Rashi gives is, let's say, you have, in those times, they didn't have toilet paper. A person has to wipe themselves after they go to the bathroom. One possibility is they would use stones. So usually stones are muktzah on Shabbos. Muktzah is a din d'rabbanan, but the Chacham is allowed that a person is allowed to carry such stones on, is allowed to move such stones on Shabbos because of covered abris. So those are examples where we take a din d'rabbanan and we set it aside for the sake of covered abris. Okay, Toshma, Visalantha Mehem, what about, let's turn to a Dindoraisa. The Pasuk says about a lost object, the Pasuk says Visalantha Mehem, the Apsukim over there, it says Loi Suchalis Alim, you see somebody's lost object, you're not allowed to pretend like you didn't see it. But then you have the previous Pasuk, it says, if you see it, Visalantha Mehem, so the simple meaning of the Pasuk is, how could you pretend like you don't see it, Hoshev Teshivim, but since the Torah phrases it like that, we learn Pa'amim Shatim Misalam Mehem, Pa'am Shenat Misalam Mehem. Sometimes you are allowed to ignore it. Okay, so what does that mean? Im Hoya Koyen Vi Beis HaKvaris, suppose that the person who finds the thing is a Koyen, and the thing is in a Beis HaKvaris, so the Koyen's not allowed to go in there and become Tomei. Oy Hoya Zokin Ve'en Alofi Kvodoy, or the person who found the Aveda is an old person, and it's not in keeping with his dignity. It's not important. It's not the kind of thing where he would carry around in the street, even if it was his own. So then, or another example would be, let's say his time is worth more than the object would be to his father. He's entitled to compensation for his lost time. But imagine you have a person who, you know, his time is worth $100 an hour, and it's going to take him an hour to return the thing, and the thing is worth $5, so it's not worth his time. So those kinds of things, about such things the Torah says, you can hide yourself. It's a loyse. They're fine, but zaken ve'enalachik kloido or whatever. Why is that take precedence over an isur daraisa? The answer is shiny hosin. That's exactly that. Because it says v'salanta mehem, the Torah itself is telling you that you have a tour in that case. Question A is the legal mina. Okay, so let's make a binyan out from that and learn for everywhere else in the Torah. The answer is we have a content from the Salamtim to learn to all other cases in the Torah that yes, that rare, that just like over here we're saying that covered abrius is doicha the loisas of loisis aleh, of loisochalif alim, the same way we should say everywhere else in the Torah also covered abrius is doicha even in isur darais. The answer is isura mimamoina lo yofinim. We can't learn a matter of isur veheter from a matter of mamon. Moment has many kulas in it. So yeah, when it comes to moment, fine, the Torah is telling us you can overlook an issue of moment in order, because it's beneath your cupboard or whatever. But not to say that the same thing should apply, for example, to Kalayim or Shabbos or what have you, that not. Okay. To be continued. Yeah.